week's episode of the Noble Capital Radio Hour, where we explore investment strategies for the modern financial landscape. I'm Sean Harris, sitting in for Chris Ragland. And joining me are two of the greatest financial minds in the room, Mr. Jess Hamill and Mr. Jaden Newman. Welcome back to the airwaves, guys.
In the room, huh? No, we don't reach any further than that?
Well, I mean, it is a true statement.
That's absolutely true.
Hey, gentlemen. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, the first show of 2019, guys. How was your holidays and your new year?
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sean, I had a great one. We had a seemed like a little longer break than normal. I don't know if it's the way the days fell down.
I think so.
This year, but it was a full 2 week. At least 2 weeks, right?
It was 10 days for me, but yeah, I was pretty close to it.
Yeah. It was awesome. For me too. I was loving it. Man, it was great.
Just enough time to where I was ready to come back to work.
Yeah. Ready to crush it.
Hey, let's do it.
Yeah, I tell you, Noble Capital had a really great 2018 also. A lot of changes, a lot of growth, and we're really looking forward to 2019. We've got some big plans in store. That being said, we're going to be talking about some financial New Year's resolutions today. The name of the episode is Your Future Self. And obviously, this is the time of year when everybody's thinking about improving themselves, whether they go on a diet or they quit smoking or whatever else it may be. And I thought we could talk about some financial New Year's resolutions because people are often thinking, well, I'm going to save more money this year, or I'm going to, you know, buy this thing or do that. And I think that's foremost on people's minds right now. So you guys ready to dive in with some New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome.
I think everybody's got a pretty good idea of what they need to do. Spend less, save more, be more responsible, don't charge as much. But it's kind of like that I need to lose weight this year, and then that drops off the scale about January 10th. If you don't set out a plan and set realistic goals and actually stick to it, you know, it's going to go out the window before January's over.
Absolutely. And that's really kind of the key, I think, is people have good intentions, but they don't know how they're going to get there.
Right.
Right? So setting that plan and, you know, I think, first of all, just kind of defining your goals, knowing what you want for the year, and then you kind of build a plan around it. Right, Jaden?
Yeah. What came to mind, Sean, when you talk about financial New Year's resolutions is it goes right back to setting goals, and not just setting goals, but having written goals. There's something powerful about writing things down. And that's one of the things I really like about our process. You know, when Jess takes a client from introduction all the way to, you know, here's your plan, your path you're going to be on now, your journey in retirement, it's a written plan. And there's very clear measurables that from meeting to meeting, whether it's a 3 months apart or 12 months apart, you can see on paper how you're doing. And it takes a lot of that ambiguity and that anxious, you know, sort of energy that's wasted and focuses it into something that's black and white that you can look at and really clearly understand and define.
It also gives you a great sense of satisfaction if you set some milestones up and hit those milestones. And you're like, all right, I said by 3 months from now I would have this done, and I'm here. It, you know, makes you feel better, makes the next milestone that much easier.
Yeah, and it kind of turns your wishes and your good intentions into something actually tangible that you can look at and you can kind of track during the year. You know, I wanted to achieve A, B, C, and D. You know, where am I at on each of these paths, right? And so once you have that financial goal sort of crystallized in your mind, then I think one thing that people kind of fail to do is actually create a budget for themselves.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just about to say, you got to have a budget. And the best way in my mind to do that is to look at what you've been spending, lay it out, everything you're actually spending, even though some of it's silly, then pull out everything that you don't need, get to a basis, and then decide how much above that line you need.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that I know really well that probably will be listening to the show said something the other day that struck me pretty hard. And it's not that profound, but it makes a lot of sense. He said to figure out what your budget is for your basic needs, what you need to get by. And then every time you spend a dollar above that, you have to put another dollar into an investment. So if you think you need this $500 item, it's now going to cost you $1,000. You put the other $500 over there. So that does two things. A lot of times you won't spend it. And second of all, if you're going to blow $500, you set $500 aside. At the end of the year, that really adds up.
And when you say put that other dollar into an investment. You're not talking about a savings account down at your local bank.
Even if it is your savings account, it's twofold. It's one, it's a motivation not to spend the money in the first place because everything costs you twice as much now. Mm-hmm. And the other one is if you find an investment that you're comfortable with, then now you've got a set schedule to drop in on it.
Yeah. You got a budget, Jaden? You have a budget in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. That's good that you brought up budgeting. In fact, you know, budgeting is become kind of, for a lot of people, a negative, you know, they probably tuned out the show when you said budgeting, right?
Yeah, we just lost half the listeners today.
It's just not fun to think about. It sounds like a lot of work, and then it's something people have tried, and they've not been able to stick to it. So, you know, I think the first step that works well for me, and I even call it this when we introduce the concept of budgeting, it's really in retirement. It's about spending. It's a retirement spending plan where you're defining your lifestyle and what you want that to look like. And that can be, when you look at it like that, it can be a much more pleasant experience sitting down, whether you're single or you're with your spouse, and planning out what the lifestyle is going to look like. Sure, there's a boring part of it, like the day-to-day bills and the reoccurring expenses, but there's also the side of it that we all are working hard for. And, you know, it's the end game that we're all looking for here. And it's having that lifestyle to do those things that really matter and to see be able to have experiences with loved ones and essentially, you know, enjoy the fruits of our labor.
And if you've been wise with your money, a lot of times that can be exhilarating because you see yourself laying out things you want to do above and beyond your basic expenses, and you give yourself permission to have that $5,000 or $20,000 or $1,000 vacation or whatever it is that you want to do. Put it on budget, and all of a sudden that permission gives you the confidence to be able to do it. It's the same thing we always talk about, the confidence in lifestyle and fulfillment. It's another step of that.
Yeah, and let's face it, you really can't be successful without a budget. I mean, here we are at the beginning of the year at Noble Capital, and, you know, for the past couple of months even and into the new year, we're setting our budget for the whole entire year, you know, so we know what we're all allotted for each quarter. And you know, I think we're cutting some of Jess's budget over here. He doesn't need that much, but you know, we first set our goals. We know what we want to achieve this year at Noble Capital, and then we need to know what each sort of division of our company needs to operate in order to do that right.
You know, there is an exception to that, and it's not one that I recommend, but I did have a couple that came in there. It's probably been 2 years ago, and the first step we always do is have them establish a budget. So I asked them off the cuff, you know, what do you think you guys go through on an annual basis? We'll get more scientific later, but give me a number to start planning with. And they could not answer. And they went back and forth trying to figure out, and they literally never came up with a budget. He said, we spend about $200,000 to $300,000 a year, and all I know is at the end of the year, we had more money than we did at the beginning of the year, so I'm fine. And that's how they were living their lives. So they were fortunate to have that kind of a portfolio, but that's not the average, not the typical client by any stretch.
Yeah, so they were lucky.
Very fortunate.
That they had more than they spent, but you can't really just rely on that luck, I think, right?
Right. And yeah. I think budgeting has a negative connotation because we were in high school. Our parents were always beating us on the head saying, quit spending all your money, put together a budget. It was to try to force you to spend less.
Yeah.
And now it's just about establishing a baseline so you know what you can spend and you can spend it confidently.
That's good. And, you know, what I would add before we go to break here is when you're talking about budgeting or putting a spending plan together, you know, that's only half the discussion. The other half is focusing on where your income's going to come from. And whether you're still working or you're retired, you know, when you look at these two things in tandem and you look out over the rest of your life and see, here's what my plan is on spending and here's what my plan is on income, that's when you're talking about really starting to get, you know, some serious planning and really a scoreboard that you're looking at to see your status. How are you doing? Are you winning at this game? Or, you know, I don't want to go through life not seeing my scoreboard.
Yeah.
Those things got to line up.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, obviously, defining your goals and creating a budget really lays the groundwork for having a successful personal financial year. And when we get back from this break, we're going to go a little more into the nitty-gritty and give you some more tips and tricks about setting your New Year's financial resolutions.
Sounds good. I'm ready.
All right. We'll be right back.
Talk 1370.
You're tuned in to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. Welcome back to the show, where we're bringing you some financial resolutions for the new year. So Jaden and Jess and I were just talking. I was kind of giving them a little bit of insight into my own personal New Year's resolution from a financial standpoint. And, you know, guys, it's just to quit buying stuff I don't need, right?
Everybody and knowing that. The difference between what you need and want.
Right, right. I mean, I think everybody does it. We all see the shiny object. You know, today it's so accessible. You can just be sitting at home or, you know, on the bus or wherever you're at on your smartphone. And, you know, you see something you like and it's just, you just press the button and it gets shipped right to your door. It's so easy.
It's even worse now. We got Alexa. I mentioned to my wife that I'm thinking about maybe getting a 7mm instead of a 270, and I pop up my Facebook, and there's an ad for it. You know,
yeah.
It's crazy.
And they're all interconnected, too, yeah. Right?
Getting what's your weakness, weather. Sean? How does it hit you?
Well,
I bet it's bike parts.
Well, for a long time, it was skateboards, you know? Because there's so many different decks and designs, like, oh, it's a new set of trucks or wheels or whatever, and that's definitely one of my weaknesses. And I got to tell you, I'm even a little bit weaker after a couple of beers, and I see something I like, and, ooh, that's brand new, and, oh, it's 10% off. I got to order it right now because I can't afford to miss that 10% off, right? So, again, I think this is an issue that a lot of people have a problem with. We just live in a society of consumerism, and we're ingrained. It's just right at our fingertips, you know. But knowing the difference, Jess, like you said, between the needs and the wants, you know, is this something I need? Is it something I want? Now, obviously, we're not monks, and we're not only going to buy rice and you know, only things that we need. But we definitely need to know the difference, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it goes back to the budgeting thing as well. It's not so much just for the budget, but the fact that we put together a budget so that we've got something to stick with. If you can come up with 5 or 6 common sense rules, write them down and, you know, go over that once a week and make sure that you're still sticking with that. Don't buy something that I don't need. Pay for it with cash. Don't charge it, et cetera, and so on. If you don't have the goals written down and identified, you forget about them. You slip right back into your old habits.
Yeah, that's good. What are some other rules we can follow to kind of stay on that path?
Tell you one thing that was big for me that I realized, and it's all about convenience, like you're talking about the one-click shopping. I had a point where almost every bill I had automatically either came out of my checking account or went to my American Express. So I lost track of it. It was all paid automatically, and when I sat down and did it manually one month, I went, wow, I ought to pay that one off. And this is 2 years into my gym membership, and I've only been once. I should cancel that. And things that you don't notice because they're on autopay, that's why they do it. So
yeah,
I would say make sure you go over your bills individually, even if you've got them auto-paying to a credit card or a checking account.
Jaden, let me ask you this. When you make purchases most of the time, is it cash or is it on a card?
Well, personally, I'm a American Express guy, and that's because of my ownership, you know, in a business.
Sure.
We use it both at a company level and a personal level. And, of course, with that credit card, it's a little different. You have to pay it off every month, so it's not a long-term credit float or potential credit float like other, you know, credit card companies try to draw us into.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it because of the points, and I'm able to build up a significant amount of points that help offset travel cost. One of the cool things is now I can use my points on Amazon, so I can go to Amazon and purchase,
pay for it.
So I guess
with the points.
When I have a couple beers and I have to go buy something I don't need, I could just put it on my Amazon points and it doesn't really count
right.
as an impulse buy anymore.
Right, right.
No, I don't think that it quite works like that. But generally I like to be a cash guy, you know, and it depends on the type of assets that
right.
that you're buying. There's some age old wisdom out there. you know, that talks about what's appropriate to pay cash for versus finance. Most people are okay with financing a home.
Sure.
Even a vehicle or you know, another major purchase like a home or vehicle. But in general, you know, putting things like vacations or, you know,
yeah,
some type of major purchase that's not really a necessity on a long-term credit float with these high interest rates, that's where you should really draw the line when we're talking about paying cash or financing. Another good one I'll tell you guys, and this, I got this from a client. This is one of my favorite parts of being in wealth management, is you talk to a lot of wealthy people that are very wealthy in thoughts and wisdom, not just in their investment accounts and bank accounts. And a lot of that wealth of knowledge has been passed on from generation to generation. And one of the good ones I got was from him is, and if he's listening, he'll know, but his dad used to always tell him that it's always been a tradition in the family, a custom, that we don't finance our toys. You know, we pay cash for them, not just for the first reason you might think, which is, you know, that's a little risky or out of bounds because you're taking on credit for things you don't really need. It's also because, and this is the interesting part, is if you ever fall onto hard times, you know, you've built this lifestyle around, you know, having some hobbies or toys or gadgets or things that you enjoy. And the worst thing that you could do for your spirit is when you go through hard times, not only experience the loss of going through a hard time and the stress from that, but you also don't have your outlets of doing those things that you enjoy because maybe you financed them and lost them to the bank or to a creditor.
Yeah.
And that's a real, like, one of the lowest places in life you could be if you think about it.
Well, to take it a step past that, Mark told you that, right?
Hey, you know by first name.
Yeah.
A shout out to Mark.
Exactly. But the next layer of that, which made the biggest impact on me, was, you know, I can have a $200,000 financed boat and I get into hard times. I let the boat go and I got rid of a $800 payment. Or I got a $200,000 boat I own outright and I get into hard times. I sell the boat and I got $200,000. So it's way better to own it outright than to just lose a payment, which really, in the overall scheme of things, is, you know, let you paddle water for a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing that I notice is, whether I'm using a debit card or a credit card, I often don't know how much I just paid at the register, right? I'll go get groceries and it's I'm just swipe the card or you know, insert it with the chip these days, right? But sometimes I don't even look at the price. So I find that when I'm using a card or I'm using credit, I'm not as cognizant of how much money I'm spending. Whereas if I use cash, you feel it more because you have to count that cash. And you have to hand it and then and see how much you get back, right? So it makes you more aware kind of how much you're spending. And on that note, you know, there's a lot of accounts out there that I've had memberships and different things like that that you kind of forget about. And those can charge monthly fees, you know, all this extra drain on your finances that, again, it's kind of below the radar. It's not really visible to you. Like, do you have a Amazon Prime membership?
No, but I know people that do and they don't use them.
Yeah. You know, Sean, what you're talking about is, when we talk to clients about this, is the relevance is that we like to make sure people are looking at what they're spending. And that's what you're talking about, is seeing, you know, not just setting a budget or a spending plan, but then actually looking at what you're spending, whether it's a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, maybe even weekly, some of you maybe daily. But at the end of the day, if you're looking every month at what you spent, then that's going to be a powerful moment when you sit down and actually look line item by line item, kind of what you spend for that month next to your actual budget.
I can remember starting out as, you know, in college as a young married couple, literally having to budget. You know, it's like, okay, am I going to have enough money to make it through the next paycheck when we go to HEB here? Maybe I need to get not that loaf of bread kind of thing. So everything just scales up. I'm not in that spot now, obviously, but I still got to spend, you know, within my means. But it's funny that you say that because I'm an American Express guy like Jaden and pay it off at the end of the month, but I'm more inclined to pay $10,000 cash for a motorcycle and use American Express for a pack of gum than the other way around, like a lot of people.
Right. Well, I tell you, I had an Amazon Prime membership for 2 years. I think I only used it once when I first opened the account. And if I had realized that it was costing me $120 a year, I would have closed it down a lot sooner. But that's something I did last year, and of course, I've saved myself $120. Doesn't sound like much, but in the big scheme of things, it does add up. All right, we'll be right back. And now, back to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, we're talking about financial resolutions you can make for 2019. Again, we're with Noble Capital, and this is what we do for a living. We do income planning, financial planning, and if you want to learn more about that, you can visit us at noblecapital.com. But of course, I've got our two main financial brains right here in the room with me. So, you know, we've kind of been talking a little bit about some of the things you can do to get your personal finances in order, a few little tips and tricks. But I really want to talk to the folks out there about what they need to do from sort of a larger financial planning standpoint. And I don't know what you guys think about this, but I've been doing a little bit of research online, and everybody says that you should open an IRA, even if you already have a 401k. So what would be the added benefits of having an IRA also?
Well, I think it's silly to limit yourself to just one or the other. So having one or two or three traditional IRAs invested differently as well as a 401k makes lots of sense. So a 401k is basically an employer-sponsored IRA, but it allows you to contribute more than the minimum that you're allowed to put into the IRA. But there's a lot of control over it with the administrator of the account and whoever's running it. So having somebody that you trust in your company that's got you set up like we have here is great. I love our 401k. You can get the matching from the employer, so that's extra money that goes into it. And then you can have an IRA off to the side where you've got a little bit more control over how you're investing it. You can day trade with it. You can do whatever you want. I like to day trade an IRA because there's no taxable event every time you buy and sell the stock. So one tidbit there, if you're day trading, do it out of your IRA. Don't do it out of a non-qualified account.
Jaden, I'm sure you have an IRA, right?
Absolutely. I have several of them.
Yeah. So let me ask you the age-old question, to Roth or not to Roth?
Yeah. So, you know, we get that question quite a bit, Roth IRAs versus traditional IRAs. Most people understand a Roth on a cursory level, but I think it's part of a larger tax planning discussion that you want to have with your advisor. And, you know, our clients are higher net worth folks where taxes are a very important topic. So, you know, there's times when we would say not to do contribute to a Roth. It's not contributing every year versus having a Roth, you know, are two different things. You open the account, you can say, and then the goal is to load it up as much as possible, but you're putting after tax dollars in there. So when it makes sense to put those dollars in is highly driven by your tax situation in that given year. If you're in a lower tax bracket year for whatever reason, whether that was deliberate, you planned that and it was very well thought through, or you maybe were unemployed or, you know, just the way it worked out, then that could be a great year to load up a Roth, to get money into a Roth. Whereas if you're in a higher tax bracket in your prime earning years and you've got a lot of taxable income coming in, then contributing to a Roth or converting to a Roth when you're having to scalp those dollars at 30, 35, 40% for taxes, then those dollars didn't go as far when they could have gone into the Roth where you only scalped them at, you know, 10 or 20 cents on the dollar.
So I'm kind of the financial dummy in the room here. Is what you're talking about a Roth conversion, or how does that work?
So I think personally, I mean, there's no reason not to have a Roth. You can open a Roth and have zero in it. And then you've always got it there to do conversions when it's convenient for you. There's a big misconception, ironically, among most of the wealthier, higher wage earners that you make too much money to contribute to a Roth. And that's absolutely true. There's a limit on income to allow you to contribute to it. But the back door to that is you put it into an IRA and 13 seconds later, convert over to a Roth. So it achieves the exact same thing. So if you've got a Roth set up and existing, like Jaden says, whenever it is appropriate from a taxable standpoint, just move it over. Just convert anytime you want. But to answer your question, contributing is putting it into the account. Converting it is taking it from your IRA, your traditional IRA, and moving it over to the Roth. Either way, it's a taxable event.
Can you also do that from a 401k to a Roth?
That's a broader question, but if you are the right age and you work for a company that allows what's called in-service withdrawals, okay, then you can take from one and move it over to the other.
Okay.
You can also do after-tax contributions to a 401k in certain situations, which is essentially having a Roth that is also sponsored by your employer.
Okay. So let me ask you this then. What would be the benefit of having, say, two traditional IRAs over having one traditional IRA? Is there any benefit to that?
Have it invested in different asset classes. You know, one great example would be to have a traditional here at Noble in the fund, and the other one could be on E-Trade or wherever, where you can dabble and you know, watch the day trade stuff and do whatever you want. But there's nothing wrong with having more than one account. Even if both of them are invested the exact same way, you have the ability to be diversified.
Okay. So another thing I hear you guys talking about a lot, especially from the standpoint of our clients, I know Jaden and Jess, you guys visit all of our clients, visit with them at least once a year, mm-hmm, right? This is kind of their yearly financial checkup, so to speak. And since we're doing a yearly sort of financial checkup here on this episode, maybe you guys can talk to the audience out there a little bit about what that yearly checkup is about and why it's so important.
So when we put together a plan for somebody, the beauty in my mind of the way our planning works is that I will lay this out for the rest of your life. And if you follow my plan exactly, I can guarantee you for the majority of it, you'll have exactly this amount of money coming in at these different milestones. But the plan is designed so that we can change every single bit of that at any time we want. So for instance, if according to the plan this year we were supposed to start one income stream, we sit down for our review and we start looking at everything and you say, you know what, I'm actually doing okay. I don't need any more income this year. Well, then we just don't turn it on until next year. Or we're sitting down for our review.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, right? But we're sitting down for our review and we say, okay, next year we were going to turn on, say, this annuity. And we're looking at your balance in your savings account and it's substantially less than it was last year. And I ask you what's going on. You say, well, we're spending more money than we thought. Well, then we'll turn on early and adjust it accordingly. So it's important to be able to monitor that plan going forward. I was meeting with a client today explaining how it worked, and he had come from another financial advisor that was just trying to sell him a bunch of annuities. And I showed him how the plan worked and how we would maintain it. He said, so you're actually managing this plan for me throughout my life. I said, yeah, that's exactly right. He said, those other guys just wanted to sell me an annuity and let me go home. So
they're salesmen, product salesmen.
Exactly. And Jaden speaks about this a lot, the difference between a financial advisor and a product salesman. And that client nailed it today, hit it right on the head.
Yeah, and just to interject, if you want to hear Jaden talk about this, we do hold what we call retirement blueprint dinners on a monthly basis. I think we do, what, two a month or somewhere thereabouts, where we'll buy you dinner and we kind of talk about, you know, the importance of financial planning and how we go about it and a lot of the things that we think are important. And if you want to attend one of those, just go visit noblecapital.com, click on the retirement section, and you can RSVP right there from the website.
Yeah, we'd love to have you out. We've got one coming up here pretty quick, so hop on that website and see if you can get yourself in. We'd love to see you.
So we're kind of talking about a yearly sort of tune-up or optimization of our client's portfolio. Is, you know, how important is tax strategy when it comes to these yearly checkups, and how much can you really do sort of on a yearly basis to optimize tax strategy, for instance?
Quite a bit, especially when you're talking about, for instance, Roth conversions. you just got to stay on top of everything. You know, towards the end of the year, we've got a pretty good idea of how much money we're going to make unless we get a huge windfall in December. But to use another annuity example, you can convert within the instrument. So if you have an annuity that you purchased with traditional IRA money, and we get towards the end of the year and you realize you could take on another $15,000 of income without popping into the next tax bracket, you can actually convert $15,000 of one of your annuities into Roth. And let's just say, for ease of math, it was a $100,000 annuity. Well, now going forward, 15% of that's going to be tax-free, and the rest of it's going to be taxable. So there's a lot of tricks and things that we can play that has a time limit on it. So if we look at it every year, we can really dial down exactly what's going on with you on that particular year and make sure that we're not missing out on an opportunity that we go from December 31st to January 1st, and now we've lost the chance.
Right. Well, I know 2018 was kind of a crazy year financially here in the U.S. and markets around the world, of course. So, Jaden, do you have people that are coming in really worried about their exposure to the markets, and is that something that you guys can really kind of make some adjustments to yearly or even more often than that to kind of, you know, save our clients money or save them a little bit of heartache and anxiety?
You know, I would say a lot of folks are worried about the market right now in general. If you're paying attention, there's been some significant volatility, a big sell-off there at the end of the year. There's a lot of unsettled investors out there right now. So absolutely, that's people's top priority right now. Especially if you're in the retirement phase, you know, you can't afford to take a big hit at this time. So protecting what you have is critical. And, you know, that's one of the big things that we discuss right up front with clients, is try to figure out if there's alignment with, you know, the way that they're looking at risk and the way that they're looking at the stock market. Not just because right now it's so volatile, but just in general, what's their philosophy on the stock market? Because everybody knows the market's going to go up and down. And if you have a good plan in place and a good strategy, then you already know what you're going to do during those times, and you know you don't have any of these panic attacks that end up leading to, you know, to mistakes that were made in an emotional reactive manner, which is what you see typically from folks that aren't planners.
Yeah, and let's face it, emotions really drive a lot of the financial markets, which is kind of counterintuitive, because as we know, the markets are not the economy and vice versa. But when investors get spooked, or some big thing is going on with trade or something else, emotions can really drive that volatility. And that's something you can't really really predict. But since we're talking about our future selves, our future financial selves, I wanted you guys to touch really quick on insurance, because let's face it, insurance, we're paying for that for our future self, not our present self, right? How can insurance save us money?
You know, that's a pretty broad question, and the definition of insurance is also, believe it or not, fairly broad. So I can insure my future earnings in such a way that I'm taking calculated risks at the levels that I'm comfortable with to make sure that I've got at least a certain amount going forward. But as far as actual insurance, I mean, it's all the smart stuff. Just because your car is paid off and you don't have a lien holder doesn't mean you still shouldn't have, you know, full coverage on your car.
Sure.
And same thing with a house. I mean, who would let an asset that large sit there without any kind of coverage? But life insurance is a three-pronged vehicle. Everybody's familiar with the death benefit, and most people, when they think of life insurance, they immediately think about death benefit. But that is one way to make sure that you don't leave a spouse stuck with a mortgage they can't afford to replace income, and you can manipulate a life insurance contract to benefit you much more while you're alive than when you're dead.
Well, folks, if you want to learn a little bit more about us, a little bit more about what we do from an income planning standpoint, you can visit noblecapital.com. When we get back, we're going to hear some tales from the trenches from our two financial advisors here, and we're also going to play Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is. We'll be right back, folks.
Talk 1370.
Once again, this is the Noble Capital Radio Hour. And we are back. If you just tuned in, as Chris Ragland would say, well, you missed the whole show. We have no good content left for you. No, seriously, we're discussing the year ahead and how you can come out on top financially. But if you did miss the first three segments of this show, you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts, SoundCloud, iTunes, or you can go directly to noblecapital.com. You can even listen to every episode right there on our website and learn more about us while you're at it. So we've been talking about our future selves, our future financial selves, and we've been giving the listeners this week some tips and tricks on how to tune up your finances and how to be successful with your financial New Year's resolution. So you guys obviously are face forward with clients every day. And obviously all of our clients are here because they're not financial planners. And maybe even worse than that, they are failures at planning their finances. And so I'm kind of curious for our Tales from the Trenches segment. Do you guys have any clients with memorable or maybe a potentially catastrophic failure to plan their finances? Anything that sticks out in your mind over the years?
I've got a few of them. The sad part, sad or not, but we're not around to see the catastrophic failure. We just can tell it's coming.
Right.
But I can remember clearly one lady that my generation, a millionaire meant a whole lot. It doesn't mean nearly as much these days as it used to. So people in my generation crush that $1 million net worth, and they get this false sense of security. They can just start blowing it on the grandkids and buying a second house, having a boat, et cetera, and so on. So this lady had a mortgage on her house and a mortgage on a lake house and a finite amount of money. And it, clearly, she was not going to make it. Even if you don't introduce inflation in there, if she had any kind of a normal lifespan, she wasn't going to make it. And I set up a plan for her. If she sold the lake house, took the equity from that, and then dropped that payment, and we laid it all out, she was going to just barely make it, but she would be okay. She said her kids would freak out if they didn't have the lake house, and her grandkids would be upset. And so she put her head in the sand and just moved forward, and she is going to run out of money.
If the ostrich effect.
Yeah, if she does not win the lottery or, you know, something crazy, she will run out of money. And she just chose to ignore it because she was a millionaire. It's very sad, very sad.
Yeah, and not only that, but she couldn't take good advice.
Yeah.
Which is a catastrophic failure right there.
Right.
What about you, Jaden? Does anything come to mind?
Oh, yeah. Being in business for 10 years, you've got plenty of war stories. I try to forget about the catastrophic failures because normally we don't really get to planning with those folks that come in, you know, that have completely missed the boat, missed the train, whatever you want to say. They're in a position where we really can't do anything for them if it's a catastrophic failure, and that's a hard thing to tell a potential new client or prospect that's coming in to visit with us. Is we're sorry,
we can't help you,
but there's nothing we can do to help you. You know, and there's little things like we can guide, give them some direction, and give them some pointers, and maybe even give them some resources to go meet with someone that could help them.
Yeah,
but the folks that we're working with usually haven't had a complete train wreck.
Yeah, and that's past that.
Yeah, that's why we're able to do business and actually help them. So, but you know, what the things that we see, I wouldn't call them catastrophic failures, but they're very memorable. Is just folks come in with, for some reason this comes to mind with New Year's here, is they might have 15, 20. 25 accounts, 30 accounts spread out all over Kingdom Come, and they don't even know what they have, and they don't know what they have in each of those accounts. They they aren't able to find statements or give us balances or remember if those accounts are still open. And going through that doesn't
happen. It's a lot of legwork.
Oh, right? It's a lot of work. Yeah. It's a very intense organizational project before we can even have a conversation about financial planning. Right. So we have to help people like that sometimes, and that's, it could take a couple meetings of just helping them get organized. And you know, before we go embark in that, we really have to have an upfront conversation and you know, get some commitment from them that they're gonna work with us. You know, we're not a get your finances organized because you don't have a clue what's going on, you know, planning shop. But we go through that, and it's very rewarding because I've had clients come in and they end up, you know, we end up finding everything they have and getting them organized. And for the first time, they're seeing their portfolio and their money in that light.
And then it's like a light switch.
Oh, it's a light switch. Like, oh, it freaks them out sometimes, too. It's not always a rosy picture that they see when they see
it. Yeah, well, that's true. That's
but we
true.
Do try to do it's housekeeping and close shut down as many of those as possible, those accounts that they don't need. Nobody needs 30 accounts.
Well, I've got it on good authority that you guys are miracle workers. So I believe in you, and I believe in the things you do. And if you guys want to come in and you want to talk to Jess or you want to talk to Jaden and take a look at your finances and get the whole picture, go visit us at noblecapital.com. You can learn more about us. And you can find all of our contact information there. So give us a call, shoot us an email. We'd love to talk to you. But I tell you what, guess what time it is, guys?
Mystery Envelope.
It is time to play Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is. This is where the show's hosts have to come up with a phrase related to this week's episode. But I get to tell them how to do it. Best part of my job. Well, I've got right here the Shonvelope. And I'm going to let her rip. So, in exactly six words, tell us your financial New Year's resolution. In exactly six words, tell me your financial New Year's resolution. While the guys are racking their brains trying to put this one together, I just want to remind you that you can learn more about us at noblecapital.com. Check us out on Facebook at Noble Capital, on Instagram at Noble Capital Radio, and you can download every episode of the Noble Capital Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts. All right, guys, that's time. Did you come up with a six-word financial New Year's resolution or what?
I did, and I think for the first time ever, I'm going to beat Jaden.
Oh, I don't know. What do you say about that, Jaden?
Bring it on there, big
guy. He's got to go first.
Oh, you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay. He wants a real shot at one-upping me here.
Yeah. All right,
let's hear it. So here it is, Jaden Newman's 2019 New Year's financial resolution. Know your numbers. Numbers don't lie.
That's truth.
That's not bad. Now, I could have guessed it because that's his favorite. He hammers that into me every month when we're looking at financials. Numbers don't lie. So I knew that was coming. But I say match non-essential dollars with investment dollars.
Oof.
Dang. That was a good one.
I'm going to have to review the tape on these to figure out who gets enshrined on the wall of wisdom. But I tell you what, that's the Noble Capital Radio Hour for this week.
I'm Jaden.
I'm Jess.
I'm Sean. And remember, life is short. Plan to enjoy it. We'll see you back here next week.
All opinions expressed by the speakers on this radio program are solely the opinions of those speakers and do not reflect the opinions of Noble Capital, Acute Financial, Streamline Funding, or their respective affiliates. Each speaker's opinions are based upon information the speakers believe to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. Each speaker's statements and opinions are subject to change without notice. The information discussed on this radio program is provided for general informational purposes only, does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you, and should not be construed as investment, legal, tax, or other advice on any subject matter. The information discussed in this radio program is not intended and should not be viewed or construed as a recommendation, advice, offer, or inducement to buy, sell, or hold securities, insurance products, or any other financial products. Before acting on any information discussed in this radio program, you should seek appropriate financial, investment, and other professional advice based on your particular facts and circumstances. Current or past performance is not indicative of future results. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment discussed on this radio program. No outcome or profit is guaranteed. Any transmission of information through this program is provided on a non-confidential basis and does not create an advisor-client relationship between you or anyone of Noble Capital, Acute Financial, or Streamline Funding. Some information provided in this program may reference other service providers, including websites operated and maintained by third parties. Such information is included solely as a convenience to you, and the provision of such information does not imply a responsibility for such third-party information or an endorsement of the linked site, its operator, or its contents. Acute Financial and Streamline Funding are both wholly owned subsidiaries of Noble Capital. Noble Capital, Acute Financial, Streamline Funding, and or their respective affiliates and principals, which may include the speakers and guests featured in this radio program, may receive compensation from the sale of financial products featured in this program. Reproduction, distribution, republication, and or retransmission of any portion of this program is strictly prohibited without the prior written permission of Acute Financial, Noble Capital, and Streamline Funding.